This is your brain on risk. This is Mind Over Money, the podcast where Kevin Cook exposes the psychology of investing.
Welcome back to Mind Over Money. I'm Kevin Cook, your field guide and storyteller for the fascinating arena of behavioral economics. This is going to be one of my favorite types of episodes where I take four important books and connect their big ideas into one bigger idea for you. An idea that can give you better perspective on the world, its origins, problems, and opportunities, and your ideal role in the grand scheme. I'll even have some investment ideas to make you money off of ways that other people are playing the game. Today's four books were all published in the last 5 years. I hope to inspire you to pick up at least one of them. And the last one is brand new from late 2019 and really exciting. Yeah, you can skip ahead in the podcast if you just want to find out what that book is, but I encourage you to listen to the whole thing because I'm going to connect them all in a very cool way. In our last episode here, titled Nationalism versus Globalism, Technology Overrules Politics, I invited economist John Blank on the show to talk about the rising populist movements around the world, the trade war, and how, while our smartphones might be giving us plenty of new problems with addiction and distraction, they symbolize the forces of innovation which could actually overcome our tribalism. What I mean is what I always say, technology changes everything but human nature. So while we know that smartphones and social media encourage some tribalism, they can also be tools of information sharing and knowledge that can overcome it. One aspect of the conversation we didn't have time for was the deep historical perspective about our tribal tendencies. And for that view, my favorite book is Sapiens by Yuval Noah Harari, the Israeli historian. Now, I put him in a category, the book is actually, when I recommend books on evolution, it's one of three books that I recommend, and I call them giant history books because they take a grand sweeping view of things. The other two books are Stephen Jay Gould's Wonderful Life, and Jared Diamond's Guns, Germs, and Steel. And Diamond and Harari actually know each other, and you could say that probably Harari's book was somewhat inspired by the work of Diamond. I've read Sapiens now. I'm reading it now for the third time since it came out, and it's like become sort of a winter tradition for me. I associate it with winter. Let me give you a quick summary, and I don't know if this is, I forget if this is from the book jacket or something. 100,000 years ago, at least six different human species inhabited the Earth. Today, there is just one, us, Homo sapiens. How did our species succeed in the late battle for dominance? Why did our foraging ancestors come together to create cities and kingdoms? How did we come to believe in gods, nations, and human rights? To trust money, books and laws, and to be enslaved by bureaucracy, timetables, and consumerism. Now, the book is divided into different sections, you know, the different revolutions, the cognitive revolution, when, you know, to answer the question, how did our species succeed in the battle for dominance? It was the cognitive revolution of about 70,000 years ago, where our big brains started to do some cool things like cooperation, language, and a capacity for empathy. And these things became critical in building social structures in small groups that could learn to survive against the odds. He obviously talks about the other revolutions, the agricultural revolution, the scientific revolution. Harari likes to, as a historian, he likes to, you know, find the big patterns in all of human civilizations. And some of those patterns are beliefs, superstitions, and fabrications. And he gives details on certain fabrications like corporations, nation states, and religions. He also talks about the systems of mutual trust, which made our advance in civilization that much more possible. Things like being able to trade with money. Money is a social fabrication, a system of mutual trust. And then the birth of empires, You know, lard, you know, the agricultural revolution allowed us to have civilizations to have large standing armies, and then armies do what they do. They go take over somebody else's land. And in there would be the creation of law and enforcement of law. And then the third system of mutual trust is obviously religions. Another cool theme of Sapiens that Harari devotes several chapters to is exploration. One really interesting part of that is he talks about the Dutch explorers being so good at two things that really made the difference in their ability to accumulate wealth and colonize many parts of the world. And that was their use of a military or mercenary force to protect their ships. And second, their concept of investment, you know, where people are allowed to invest in a ship or exploring company. And then, so Dutch explorers would take out these loans, finance an expedition, and hopefully get rich off of the expedition, and then be able to repay those loans. And that's what made them so successful as seafarers and empire builders. Let me just read some of the chapters that stand out from part one, The Cognitive Revolution in Sapiens. The first chapter is called An Animal of No Significance. I love that title because it shows that, you know, say 100,000 years ago, you know, our chances of survival were not guaranteed. Let's put it that way. Part two in the Agricultural Revolution, he has a chapter. Chapter five is called History's Biggest Fraud. And what he's talking about there is the Agricultural Revolution, where we domesticated wheat, for instance, and then end up becoming enslaved to it because it creates a whole system of, you know, farming and labor and animal husbandry that, you know, that humans basically became a slave to and wasn't really good for the average person, even though the idea is, oh, we've got more food for everybody at harvest time. It actually required slaves to operate through most civilizations. In part three, part three is called The Unification of Humankind. And that's where you get into the ideas that trade and money, empires, religions, and laws were the unifying forces of humanity. Then the chapter titles there are The Scent of Money, Imperial Visions, and The Law of Religion. Part four is The Scientific Revolution. And he's got a chapter 15, titled The Marriage of Science and Empire. And he does a really good job here of showing how science benefited from the quest for empire. So, for instance, if the Dutch or Spanish or Italian or British explorers were sending off an expedition, many times they took scholars with them. And scientists, and they aimed to collect data, information, samples, whatnot. But that also, in that sense, it propelled science. And so the two worked hand in hand, and then you can see how technology is incubated in that chemistry of empire and science. All right, so Sapiens is our first book today. Remember both the empire and explorer themes, as we'll come back to them in the other three books. All right, on January 9th, I was listening to NPR, and I happened to catch an interview with Evan Osnos on Terry Gross's Fresh Air. He's a staff writer at The New Yorker. He is a fellow at the Brookings Institution and a longtime student of China. He wrote a piece for The New Yorker on U.S.-China relations with good perspective on the voices which might exacerbate conflict. And those voices that have the White House's ear would be Newt Gingrich, Peter Navarro, and Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, all sort of China hawks. And he also talked about ways that we might coexist. I haven't read the article, but I just listened to the interview on NPR, which was good, and I've got to get around to reading the article. So he also talks about ways that we might coexist as global competitors, the U.S. and China. So listening to Osnos inspired me to hunt my local library to find some books on China. I wanted something in my hands that day, and I feel very fortunate to have found a book by a man named Michael Pillsbury titled The 100-Year Marathon. And the more I looked at this book and learned about him, I mean, he is by far the preeminent U.S. authority on China. The guy's been dealing with China since 1969 and through many administrations. I believe he's at the Hudson Institute think tank right now, which was started by Herman Kahn, who I've mentioned before. I mentioned in the last podcast, the scientist strategist who speaks of the resourceful earth and sees no limits to growth. Let's see. So, I mean, I'm so impressed with Pillsbury and this book and the other books he's written about China. I mean, he could run circles around the other three experts on China that are currently advising the White House. All right, so and this is our second book to sample today, and we'll dive into it shortly. First, I want to talk about some content that I created recently and reviewed some old stuff that is helpful to this conversation. The perspectives from both Osnos in The New Yorker and Pillsbury in his book, The 100-Year Marathon, inspired me to review my stances on China, both politically and technologically. As an investor in Chinese tech companies like Alibaba and Baidu, which are the two giants that roughly mirror the business models of Amazon and Google, I had written and podcasted several times in the past few years on the tech wars with China. So in August of 2018, I wrote a special report for Zacks Confidential titled Artificial Intelligence, Investing in Life 3.0, in which I reviewed the economic case for investing in AI-focused companies. By the way, that steals the part of a title from another book, Life 3.0 by Max Tegmark. He's a physicist at MIT who writes a lot about artificial intelligence. So, I've done some stuff in the podcast archives here. If you want to look at, I mean, if you're on iTunes or SoundCloud, you should be able to see some sort of archive for my podcast, but you can also find it on zacks.com/podcasts. And then you can see just a whole page of titles and descriptions. All right. So I've been focused on big data and artificial intelligence companies for a while, just because it's, you know, in the next couple of years, this new cloud big data analytics industry, if you want to call it that, is going to grow to over $300 billion in revenues. So I focus a lot on the companies and the trends. So what else am I looking at here? Okay. So And again, this is the second thing I did in August of 2018 that's important here. And it brings in another book. I made a video and article titled AI Arms Race with China, Deep Learning and Investing. And I was inspired to do this after I listened to a presentation by Kai-Fu Lee. He's a Taiwanese-born American AI pioneer. He's a China expert and a venture capitalist. He's worked at Apple, Microsoft, Google, and he created his own company and investment firm called Sinovation Ventures. His book of 2018 is titled AI Superpowers, China, Silicon Valley, and the New World Order. And he sort of, you know, he's Taiwanese, and I'm not sure where he stands on the communist regime in China, but he's definitely taking a hard and serious look at what's coming between China and the U.S. And so this inspired me to do something, this week. I just did a podcast. I wrote a report for Zacks Confidential. We'll get to that in a minute. I just want to tell you one more thing about Lee. In Lee's book, AI Superpowers, he describes how China is rapidly moving forward to become the global leader in AI. and may well surpass the U.S. because of China's demographics, obviously a huge population, and it's amassing huge data sets. You could also say that China has more control over everything, right? They don't face, they lack the ethical constraints in terms of data protection and IP regulations. Kai-Fu Lee sums up his view of China and the New World Order in this quote: "If data is the new oil, then China is the new Saudi Arabia." All right, so I got some pushback in the past couple of years for talking about the arms race in artificial intelligence. You know, people look around and go, "What are you talking about?" And, you know, arms race doesn't AI doesn't exactly create weapons. But AI is a new type of technology, and it allows so many new types of things to happen. I mean, we can just talk about cyber warfare, for that matter. So what I did is I put together this this special report. I wrote it on Monday, January 13th, and I'm actually talking to you, recording this on January 14th. The title of my special report is AI Arms Race, Get Smart or Get Disrupted. Now, the title doesn't say anything about China, but I'm using the potential arms race with China as sort of a focal point, because here's my logic. We already know that Amazon, Google, Microsoft, Salesforce, Baidu, Alibaba, all these cloud titans, they're all competing to develop new technologies and enter new businesses, disrupt businesses, get new customers, you know, find a new edge and new sources of revenue and profit. And that competition will drive the innovation in AI. But two nation states competing, two empires competing to develop the most powerful technology of the century, will only intensify that race among corporations. And there's going to be, intermingling. Of course, in China, the state and the companies are intimately connected, and one oversees the other, as you might guess. Here, there are bigger walls between government and corporations. But the two races sort of feed each other, the private sector and the government. So this is what I wanted to look into more, and I found some great resources. I got the 100-year marathon here from Michael Pillsbury, and I'll tell you the subtitle of his book: China's Secret Strategy to Replace America as the Global Superpower. Now, that's a pretty provocative subtitle. Secret Strategy to Replace America as a Global Superpower. But I'm telling you, this guy knows his stuff. He's been studying China culturally, politically, technologically, militarily for 50 years. Okay? And he'll be the first one to tell you, for the first 25 years, he felt he was naive. He was very pro-China, wanted to open up communication, dialogue, and everything coming out of China was good. And he has become more hawkish in the last 20 years or so. He's got good reasons. Let's put it that way, because he understands their culture. It's like I talked about in the last podcast, the reason that I doubted that there would be a trade peace in this new tariff war between the U.S. and China is that China has a longer term time perspective. That they will just sit back and wait. And they're also playing, they're playing the art of war, Sun Tzu's art of war, which is all about tactics of deception and using your opponent's strengths and weaknesses against them. So obviously, Michael Pillsbury picked the right title for his book, The 100-Year Marathon, in China's long-term strategies to be the dominant empire on the planet, and at least in their part of the world, they have a very long time frame view. Okay, so let me share with you the three experts that I used for this report. And one, let's see if I got it right here in front of me. Yeah. Okay. So, where's my first guy? Oh, my first guy is a general. He's a general in the Air Force. And he gave a talk in December at the Naval War College. Let's see if I can find that here in my report. I got so many experts, I'm forgetting who they are. All right. And then I'll come back to Michael Pillsbury's book because I want to read something. So on December 13th, Lieutenant General Jack Shanahan, he's the director of the DOD's Joint Artificial Intelligence Center. He gave a talk at the Naval War College, and he said, it is time to dive in to AI because we don't know, you know, like we can speculate on what the Chinese might do with AI militarily, but we don't know for sure. He just says, we can't be caught off guard either. You know, and we're talking about beyond robots here. So that's what he had to say. Now let me go back to Michael Pillsbury's book, because this is really sort of the framework, the political framework for dealing with China, especially when it comes to advanced technologies. So Pillsbury warns about the false assumptions we make in addressing China threats. So I'm just going to read from my article here in this paragraph. Even as I knew last year that China would play their own art of war hardball with the U.S. in trade negotiations, I didn't quite understand the depth of their winner-take-all philosophy until I found this book by Pillsbury. Here are Pillsbury's five mistakes, or he calls them five false assumptions. Number one, engagement brings complete cooperation. And this is the idea that, oh, we can assume that if we have friendly relations and trade with China, that that's a signal of long-term peace and that there will be no other espionage. He says that's a false assumption. Number two, China is on the road to democracy. Well, we're having another test of that right now in Hong Kong, and it could go either way. You know, as I said in the podcast a few weeks ago with John Blank, I think technology and the world's current youth culture that wants to travel and learn and be social and ignore cultural barriers and break down borders, that will spread more democracy throughout the world. But we don't know that for sure. And Hong Kong is going to be a great test, another great real-time test to see what happens, as the empire shows its own values and goals on the topic. All right, Pillsbury's number three false assumption, China, the fragile flower. So, for instance, how long have we been talking about, the economic growth rates cannot continue, implosion of this economy on steroids is imminent, but the thing is that China actually likes that underdog narrative. So we have to keep that in mind, and he knows this. All right, Pillsbury's fourth false assumption, China wants to be just like us. And I would summarize that as, the reality is Chinese culture is imbued with ambiguity and the power of deception. So, their culture is, how old is their culture, right? Thousands of years old. And so they've been at this a while. Number five of the five false assumptions in Michael Pillsbury's book, The 100-Year Marathon, China's hawks are weak, meaning China's, not the hawks here against China, China's actual hawks that are, think in military terms and think in world domination. the most recent example, proof we have there, we haven't seen any military exercises where they're, dealing aggressively with Hong Kong or those islands that are in question that they want to have control over near key shipping lanes. But what we've seen in the trade war is that they play the long game and they intend to win. Okay, so that is the 100-Year Marathon from Michael Pillsbury. It's from 2015. So if you're interested in the topic and you want to learn about it from somebody who really knows their stuff and has been studying China for 50 years, this is the book to pick up. All right, our third book today, rather, and I know I've already talked about five books, but the ones that I'm spending the most time with and can actually pick up and hold have been Sapiens, The 100-Year Marathon, and now The Future of Humanity by Michio Kaku. That name may sound familiar. He does a lot of stuff on social media. He's probably done some PBS stuff. The subtitle of this book is Terraforming Mars, Interstellar Travel, Immortality, and Our Destiny Beyond Earth. Let me tell you about who Michio Kaku is. He's a professor of theoretical physics at the City University of New York, co-founder of string field theory, and the author of several widely acclaimed science books, including Beyond Einstein, The Future of the Mind, Hyperspace, Physics of the Future, and Physics of the Impossible. He is the science correspondent for CBS This Morning. Okay, so that's where you might know him. He's pretty famous for that. And host of numerous TV science specials and of the radio programs Science Fantastic and Exploration. Pretty smart guy. And so his vision is on space and our destiny to colonize space, starting with Mars, obviously, before we can even talk about interstellar travel. Immortality, he's going there, looking at stuff that can happen in medicine or gene editing. And I'm not going to spend too much time with this book because I want to get to the next one, which is really exciting. But let me see when he did this. I think this is a 2018 book. Yeah, 2018. So if you're up for a wild ride of what the future could look like, I would either recommend Tegmark's Life 3.0, which is more focused on artificial intelligence, or this really wide open one where Michio Kaku is looking at, you know, our destiny in the stars, basically, destiny beyond Earth. So, by the way, if you want a copy of that Zacks Confidential report that I wrote, which is a special subscription here at Zacks, just email me and I'll email it to you. That report was titled AI Arms Race, Get Smart or Get Disrupted. So my email is kcook@zacks.com, kcook@zacks.com, and you could just put AI arms race or AI report in the subject line, and I'll hammer that out to you. All right, so my last book of the day, so exciting that I found this, Beyond the Known by Andrew Rader, How Exploration Created the Modern World and Will Take Us to the Stars. All right, obviously you can see the connections there. I started with a book that talked about human empires and human exploration and just got done talking about Michio Kaku and, inhabiting the solar system and beyond. And now we have this book. Now, who is this guy? What does he know? Well, this guy's pretty cool. I didn't even know existed. He's like the Elon Musk that you did not know existed because he is a mission manager at SpaceX, Elon Musk's space company. Andrew Rader holds a PhD in aerospace engineering from MIT, specializing in long-duration spaceflight. In 2013, he won the Discovery Channel's competitive television series, Canada's Greatest Know-It-All. He's a tabletop game designer and trivia aficionado, and his writing has appeared in the New York Times, Slate Vice, and other outlets. You can find him at andrew-rader, R-A-D-E-R.com. It doesn't even mention that he's a historian of some regard, too. I don't know. I mean, you know, maybe he's just he didn't get a degree in it, but obviously studying history is a big part of what he does, because that's what he does in this book. If you if I turn to the table of contents here, he's going back to the explorers, from the beginning. let's say, 3,000 years ago. I know he's got the Phoenicians in here, maybe the Polynesians. So he's He's looking at peoples that wanted to travel and see what was over the horizon, whether it was mountains or the ocean. And so he does a whole section on early seafaring. And then he looks at Europe after the fall of Rome in the Middle Ages and the Vikings coming down in 800 AD and conquering everyone and spreading about and the seafarers that they were. And all along, he's tying in the same things as that Harari does, that exploration feeds the development of knowledge, spreading culture, and creating new technologies. and then he gets to the modern empires of trade and exploration. And then the last section, part four, is titled Becoming Star Trek. Because obviously that is one of his greatest passions is finding out our destiny in the stars, just like Michio Kaku. And so what's so fun about this book is, you know, we're doing this, he's got these vignettes on different peoples doing different exploration, you know, whether it's Phoenicians or Polynesians or Vikings. And then he takes us right up to, you know, our next explorers, you know, the people working on the International Space Station, planning to colonize Mars. Well, we have to terraform it first, obviously. By the way, did you see the film The Martian with, I forget his name, who's the kid in the Bourne Supremacy movies? Matt Damon. That's a cool movie because, you know, he gets trapped there and has to learn how to survive. And I'll never forget the line where he's like, I'm going to science the shit out of this. And he just basically learns how to make it work. And so that's a window on a possibility. And so he, in a sense, you're rooting for him because he's representing the whole human race. You know, can he pull this off and survive in this completely hostile environment, hostile to human life, that is. All right, so I definitely recommend all four of these books and more that I've mentioned. It's actually six books because I threw in Kai-Fu Lee. Let me give you the name of Kai-Fu Lee's book again. Oh, and by the way, all of this, I write an article after I do a podcast, and I put everything in there. I put all the book titles, any good links, summarize some of the stuff we talked about, and I name names, you know, names of the companies. Like for instance, in the special report I wrote this week on the AI arms race, I recommended four companies that I believe investors should be looking at, should be buying. I own at least three of them to be involved in the future of AI, and none of them are related to defense. You could say, I'll tell you, one of them obviously is NVIDIA. NVIDIA is my favorite AI company because Jensen Huang at NVIDIA, you know, he took the parallel processing chips from gaming and applied them to parallel processing and machine learning and the future of AI, and has just done incredible things. And he creates what they do is they're not just building a chip, they're creating a whole stack, hardware, software stack, that is intelligent and programmable and allows developers to to build the types of programs that they want to do in machine learning. And I've done podcasts before about how this kind of technology was used to, you know, crack the Texas Hold'em poker code, Google's DeepMind beat the game of Go. And those are like gaming applications for what's possible, but those were problems that needed to be solved. And the engineers and computer scientists figured it out using, you know, these advanced parallel processing chips. Another stock I recommended was Alteryx. Alteryx is a data analytics company that allows any corporation to take their raw, unstructured, sometimes hidden data and to dig into it, clean it, prep it, model it, and turn it into something useful, or at least to find out what's there and see if there's something useful in the data that they hadn't seen before. And the customers who use Alteryx just love it. And you're talking, you know, companies in every industry, from energy and retail to other technology companies, data-centric companies that, you know, are being flooded in data. There's this data deluge for all these companies. There are sensors and networks and internet logs are just tracking everything, but it just gets stored on a server. And they don't know, you know, they don't know what's there or how they might make use of it. And that's the Alteryx platform allows them to do that. And the customers just love it. Like, this is something that Alteryx is only like a $7 billion company. And Microsoft or Google could easily copy it, probably have their own in-house versions. And you would think, oh, okay, well, one of the big guys that's one of the big data monsters could put Alteryx out of business. And my read on it is that I don't think so, because customers love Alteryx. It's just like a platform you love to use and gives you a power capability in your business. You don't want to give it up. I also recommended the cybersecurity company CrowdStrike, because CrowdStrike uses machine learning to detect threats. And that will become more and more important because in the age of cyberware warfare, which this decade will probably be known as, some of this malware, ransomware, whatever, is going to be run by machines, and it's going to be created by machines. And so really, I look at CrowdStrike as a company that's going where the ball will be in terms of using AI to detect and defeat threats. I also recommend some healthcare companies too that that I think are on the cutting edge. I actually own four diagnostic companies that are using all the advanced technologies together in healthcare and in data science to be proactive about disease, whether detecting cancer, detecting re-emergent cancer, that kind of thing. So follow me on Zacks.com to learn more about those companies. And I think that pretty much wraps this up. Remember, article version will be on Zacks.com of this article. It'll be titled Empires and Explorers. And you can get all these links, and I'll name all the books. Oh, the other books I want to make sure that you knew about were Kai-Fu Lee. I always forget. I think it's AI Superpowers. Where's Kai-Fu right now? Oh, I lost track of him. Anyway, Kai-Fu Lee, AI Superpowers. He's looking at U.S. and China. Just Google him. K-A-I-F-U and the last name Lee. And then who else did I mention? Oh, I mentioned Max Tegmark, Life 3.0. And he knows Elon Musk, and they talk a lot about AI. Musk, you know, I got to hand it to him. Remember he got, I don't know if you recall this, he got in an argument over on Twitter with, when does he not do that? With Mark Zuckerberg, who, you know, Zuck was kind of sanguine about the future and power of AI, and Musk is like, you don't know what you're talking about, because he understands how it can be misused. And then, like, what, 2 years later, I did a podcast on that. I called it the Facebook faceplant, the first big AI failure, because, you know, the algorithms let the machine sort of run away. All right, I've given you enough to think about. Email me at kcook@zacks.com if you want to get that report or learn anything new. And look for that article, Empires and Explorers. The link will be somewhere. It'll definitely be on SoundCloud. All right. Talk to you soon.
This material is being provided for informational purposes only, and nothing herein constitutes investment, legal, accounting, or tax advice, or a recommendation to buy, sell, or hold a security. Do not act or rely upon the information and advice given in this podcast without seeking the services of competent and professional legal, tax, or accounting counsel. Publication and distribution of this podcast is not intended to create, and the information contained herein does not constitute an attorney-client relationship. No recommendation or advice is being given as to whether any investment or strategy is suitable for a particular investor. It should not be assumed that any investments in securities, companies, sectors, or markets identified and described were or will be profitable. All information is current as of the date herein and is subject to change without notice. Any views or opinions expressed may not reflect those of Zacks Investment Research as a whole.